When you talk to product folks, what they love is they love good products. I mean, that's their nature. It's that idea that the best product wins is actually becoming a reality, because when you sell to product people, they want to make sure you have a good product that's going to nicely integrate in their stack. And, you know, we can talk about what makes a good product, but that's what wins right now.
Welcome to the SaaS Revolution Show, a podcast by SaaSDoc. Here, we interview SaaS founders from around the world who've been there and done that. They share the ins and outs of how they built their businesses, their operations, their path to securing investment, and more. Our mission with the podcast is to help you, the founder, learn how to scale your SaaS, maintain your well-being, and navigate the complexities of this ever-changing industry. I'm your host, Alex Dima, and together we'll explore the good, the bad, and the ugly in the journey to SaaS success. Okay, welcome back to the SaaS Revolution Show. I am your host, Alex Dima, CEO, founder of SaaSDoc. Delighted to be joined today by SC Moati, who is the general partner at Mighty Capital. Welcome, SC. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Yeah, good to have you on the show. Nice and early on the West Coast of the US, right? 7:45, I believe.
Yes, it's 7:45, but I'm an early bird. I wake up at 5.
Typically, would your working day start at like 8 o'clock, or what time? How much work do you get done perhaps before 8?
I'm caught up on email, ready to go by generally 7:30. I wake up at 5 so that I can do the morning routine, you know, exercise, self-care. I have 2 cats, and so get some cuddles in as well. Start the day on the right foot.
Out of curiosity, morning routine, what would that look like?
Yeah. So, you know, both my husband and I are in tech, and we both wake up around 5. And then, like I said, you know, it's like a little bit of cuddle with the cats, and then straight into, I have sort of a exercise, you know, wellness practice with strength and running and yoga. So the mix of the day, and then catching up on email, catching up with sort of personal stuff first thing in the morning. And then meetings will start. I generally have a lot of meetings straight up, like around 7:30 through sort of mid-morning, catching up with folks on the East Coast and folks in Europe as well.
Yeah, I think, like I mentioned, I used to get up at 5, but have now shifted it to 6. But I've gotten out. I always used to work out in the morning to, you know, 30 minutes, sometimes a bit more. And it really kind of helped. A great way to start the day. Now I've actually shifted that to, I mean, I do a walk every day with my dogs before work starts. But at lunchtime, I am now doing my exercise, and I find that it just gives me that additional boost, you know, in the afternoon. So using the lunchtime to do the exercise now. But moving away from morning routines, we haven't got to know quite yet who you are and who the guest is. So let's start with that question. Who is SC Moati?
Yes. Well, you know, I was born and raised in Paris, in France, and studied electrical engineering there. I got a job when I graduated as an electrical engineer for about 2 months. Realized that was never going to be my path. I really had a mind for business, and wanted to, you know, kind of see the world, have a global, you know, life. And so immediately I moved to California, to the Bay Area, got my MBA at Stanford. And there I spent a decade in Silicon Valley. I made a name for myself during the mobile era, where I built services that, you know, were in the top 1% of the App Store, won a number of awards like Emmy nomination, Wall Street Journal Innovation Awards. Worked for, you know, companies like Meta, which went like hyper growth, and companies like Nokia, which went the other way. So learned a lot from that. And then after I sold my last company, started to do some angel investing. And did that with some success. And so There's a story of, you know, the founding of Mighty Capital, which I'm sure we're going to get into, but started Mighty Capital 6 years ago.
Thanks for sharing that. And yeah, I guess kind of often angel investing, well, I don't know what the percentage is, but does lead into, of like people going into actual venture capital and starting their own funds. When you were doing angel investing, did you have that in mind that, hey, I'm going to build up this track record and I'm going to learn through angel investing? Tell us a little bit about that and then into the founding story of Mighty Capital.
Yeah, so, it's interesting because one of the mistakes I made when I started Mighty Capital was to think that every product person is going to make a great investor. Turns out that's actually the exception, not the rule. Generally speaking, product people, and I'm one of them formerly, they love building stuff. And so they're in the business of creation, saying yes, additive. Investing is the business of saying no, right? Managing risks. And so the conversion is not obvious at all. So the founding story, if you want, is interesting in that I got some early successes. I met with some investors that I learned so much from. In fact, so much that one of my core beliefs is, investing is a team game. A lot of folks think of investing as sort of the lone wolf who goes and hunts for deals. That's not at all how we look at investing. It's very collaborative. It's very much putting a team at the disposal of our founders. And then the other thing is because it's such a non-obvious transition from being an entrepreneur or an operator to investing. I actually started teaching. I love teaching, and I do that generally to also, learn and become a master at a topic. So I started teaching early stage investing at Stanford and realized that a lot of people go into investing first by writing checks. And so by the time they become good, they've lost a lot of money. The course really, I hope, helped a few hundred people make money from early stage investing. In parallel to doing all that, so learning about investing, which is very long cycles, I was also at the time, because of the reputation I had developed as a product manager, I was invited to write a book on what makes a great product, which is right here. It's that yellow book here. And that book did well, became a bestseller, but more importantly, as I was writing this book, I was interviewing my peers at the time, product managers, to get their perspective on what makes a great product. I was hosting, nerd dinners on products. And that became a community that I incorporated as a not-for-profit, which today is a large network that engages 500,000 product managers. There's a CEO and a team of 10 or so people who run it. But the point is these product managers, they started to bring me a lot of investment opportunities. And one thing led to another. I not only learned to be good as an investor from the folks I met who taught me so much, but I also got a lot of deal flow. And so I became really excited and good at investing. Briefly joined an old school VC firm, realized that if I applied my product mindset to venture capital, it was an industry that was so ripe for disruption. People still do things the way they did it 50 years ago. It's a bunch of dinosaurs there. And so I started Mighty Capital with my fellow GP to disrupt the venture capital industry. And so far, so good.
Amazing. And I didn't know that. It's a really cool to hear. And you do see that, whether it's commonly or not, that people that build these great communities, may move into venture capital. And either, as you say, having the community as the deal source flow, or actually the community involved as well as part of the LPs as well. And was that the case in, with the first fund for Mighty Capital? in terms of the LPs, did you include, you know, some of the community members within that? What did that look like from, let's say, an individual perspective to institutional investment?
Yeah, so the short answer is the value of this community to the venture capital firm is three things, and not LPs, not money. The first one is, like you said, it's a sourcing mechanism. Product managers, you know, see trends before anybody else sees them. And because they work for companies, they're not entrepreneurs, they have the budget to buy and experiment a lot with innovation. So sourcing deals, winning deals is also a huge element of what this community brings to us. Because when product managers experiment with the technologies of the companies we invest in, they basically, you know, increase the revenue of these startups. And so a lot of our entrepreneurs said, you know, thanks to Mighty Capital, they've become, you know, category king, if you want. They've made millions of dollars in revenue. Some have accelerated their sales cycle by 30%. So simply by, you know, tailoring the network to the needs of our portfolio companies, we're able to generate phenomenal results for them. And so we're way more than an investor. We're really partnering on, you know, giving, you know, investing money, but also giving value. And then the third element that's super valuable to Mighty Capital is you know, capital efficiency. And if you've tried to raise money from venture capitalists, like old school, you know, dinosaurs, they're going to, you know, host you in their marble offices, and you're going to be, you know, sort of wooed with a lot of, you know, waste, right? Not really the entrepreneurial spirit that they preach. But for us, that's exactly how we do this, because all the advice, all the talent, all the value add we get from this community is provided for free, as opposed to we have to pay such massive dollars to, you know, buy it, like a lot of the firms who have, you know, 400 or 500 people on their payroll. And what it does for our own investors is it allows us to remain a small firm, very capital efficient, with the best talent, but in a capital efficient way. And therefore, the performance of the fund is extraordinary.
Amazing, amazing. Yeah, you definitely have that a competitive advantage there, and certainly for you know, product based, product led companies. What about in terms of some of the companies that you've invested in? I've seen on your portfolio, and obviously some very recognizable companies there. Maybe any interesting stories on, let's say, Amplitude specifically. We also spoke previously about On Platform as well, and just sharing a little bit of insight. Like again, was this? Did you find these opportunities through this sort of community platform, or how did it come about? When did you invest? The value that you added, and you know what they look like today.
Yeah, so maybe I can start with Amplitude. These are both great examples of the value we bring. Amplitude came to us through the community. This community every year for the past 7 years has run product awards. And so you nominate, as a product manager, right? You nominate a product that you love that makes your life or work easier. And Amplitude has been nominated many, many times. In fact, it won awards many times. So when we noticed them through one of those nominations, we got to know them and we exposed them to the network. We featured them on the award-winning podcast. They received awards that they then used in their go-to-market motion to say, we won an award for best product in this, you know, this category. We hosted executive roundtables with their target customers in product. And so as a result of that, the CEO says that we've accelerated their sales cycle by 30% and generated millions of dollars in revenue. Now, when you do that, you know, at an early stage, you're really helping these companies move along. And so even though it was a, you know, very hard round to get into, Amplitude, you know, Benchmark was in there, IVP, Battery, alongside with us. Spencer held on to, you know, us as investor, and then Sequoia came on board. The company went public in 2021 with a $5 billion market cap and is still perceived as an innovator. And what I love about them is there's also, you know, David and Goliath story, because they directly compete against Google Analytics, which is, you know, the free product with infinite distribution. You think it's impossible to beat them. And here is, you know, public company now delivering more value with initially zero distribution and a paid product. So it's such a great story.
What about on platforms? So again, I think this is a generative AI company that I think last year crossed roughly 100 million ARR. Again, it'd be interesting to learn a little bit about that.
This is another great company, and you know, in our second fund, half of our investments are in AI, but none of them in the last couple of years since the, you know, the Altman OpenAI hype. So we, you know, through that platform, that's another, you know, way that we're really early to market as investors. Anyway, so Game On, we met them the same way. They were nominated as a you know, potential award recipient. And once we started to get to know them, it was such an interesting value proposition, which at the time was completely novel, to create a communication platform that was powered by AI to engage sports fans with the sports teams that they love. And so they were a vertical play with really high penetration in their industry, and they wanted to become a platform. And so we introduced them, like the value we brought, right, is we introduced them to a number of brands in e-commerce, in entertainment, in luxury brands. I'm talking about brands like Neiman Marcus and others, which they signed. And a couple years into this, they rebranded themselves as On Platform, because now they've become a platform. We led their round as a result of the value we brought to them. By the way, won that deal against SoftBank at a time that it was difficult to do that. But that's just to share, you know, the value we bring and how much entrepreneurs value it for their business growth.
Okay, so obviously what we wanted to talk about today, and you guys have extensively speak about go-to-market and written a white paper around go-to-market, is the fact that when we speak to founders, typically their main challenges when asked, you know, are often around go-to-market. And, you know, it seems that perhaps sort of nowadays they're not really sure what are the right channels, that it's broken. But you've certainly got some, you know, insights in that from your companies and your white paper in perhaps, you know, how to fix it, what you're seeing is working. So really kind of curious to learn more about that.
You're absolutely right that the number one concern founders and CEOs have is about go-to-market, and rightfully so, because the traditional go-to-market, you know, it used to be, and I'm simplifying, of course, but for enterprise go-to-market, first you send a bunch of emails. Now that's gone, because with AI, you can no longer send emails that actually get read. I get 500 or sometimes 1,000 a day. I'm sure, Alex, you get a ton as well. So AI has basically killed the email channel. And then after those emails, you call people, say, hey, did you get my email with your, you know, SDR teams? And that's gone because of COVID, right? People don't have offices with phones that they pick up anymore. And so that's also gone. So your entire top of the funnel vanished in the last 5 years. And so how do you build your funnel back? Well, one is through communities like yours or communities like ours, which is a very effective way to get engagement. And two is through your own product, product-led growth being sort of a tip of the iceberg use case of that example, which has a lot of limitations. We can talk about that. But really what we're seeing is product-first enterprise sales, which is saying, I'm going to build a sales force that sells to product managers. And that's another massive shift that's happening also since, you know, the past 5 years, which is inside large enterprises, so the buyers of, you know, most enterprise companies, the product function is now so important because it drives digital transformations. And so the budgets for products have exploded. They are the ones who are deciding what to buy, what to bring into the organization, and marketing budgets are shrinking, engineering budgets are shrinking, finance budget are shrinking, but product budgets are increasing. So the question entrepreneurs are asking themselves is, how do I sell? What's the playbook, right, to sell to these product VPs, director, which is interesting because when you talk to product folks, what they love is they love good products. I mean, that's their nature. And so it's that, you know, idea that the best product wins is actually becoming a reality, because when you sell to product people, they want to make sure you have a good product that's going to nicely integrate in their stack. And, you know, we can talk about what makes a good product, but that's what wins right now.
Amazing. And so I think you're absolutely right in, and what we saw last year was that marketing budgets are generally, like, they've really shrunk. And I met with a number of founders that attended SaaSoc in Dublin, and some of them hadn't really won any new business at all that year, right? And they were really, really struggling. And then I saw a shift in the market again from speaking to the customers that, oh, the marketing budgets are not there. So now we're going to sell to the CFO, right? And the CFO is the person, you know, controlling the budget, you know, ultimately at the top. And so we've seen a lot of customers kind of shift to that and say, hey, you know, do you bring CFOs to SaaSoc? Because if you do, we're really interested in that. So actually, from what you're saying, in selling to the product manager, again, it makes a lot of sense. Are you, obviously, you're saying what you're seeing and hearing and sharing that, but would that be then fair for everybody that's listening right now who's selling to, you're trying to get into the marketing budget or trying to sell the CFO, that they should be looking at selling to the product manager?
Yes, absolutely. So this is what I see, right? It used to be, right, in the early days of tech, like 50 years ago when, you know, venture capital and tech was first started, that the mantra was like Don Valentine at Sequoia saying, find new markets. And that was because at the time, you know, tech had zero market penetration. There were very few choices. And so customers were basically picking up what was available on the shelf. And so it was a marketing play. If you can get into a new market, if you can get it in hands of customers, they're going to buy it because they're gullible. They don't have options. But now we don't live in that era. We live in an era where tech is mostly monopolies, right? It's like the FANG, the Magnificent Seven, whatever is the flavor of the day. So tech are virtual monopolies. And so a product gets adopted not by people telling you it's a great product. Marketers, like, you know, customers are very skeptical of that, but by other customers saying, this is a great product, it's been helpful for me, it's brought me ROI. And so it's really very much a product-driven sales motion, which is why, you know, marketers' budgets are shrinking. Now, why I'm saying finance budgets are shrinking, actually finance influence is still there because now we're in an economic crisis, so you need to demonstrate ROI, TCO, but finance budget are shrinking because it used to be that the CFO was driving M&A. Now, M&A is important for entrepreneurs, right? Because that's your exit path. But what was happening, or what has been happening in the organization, is, say, CFO buys a company and says, oh, please, here, product team, find me some synergies between your team and this new product team that we just acquired. And those people, they have different cultures. They have different ways to do stuff. They actually don't work together. They don't get along. And so product team will say, oh, I'm going to, you know, at the on the surface, create pricing synergies, but there's actually no product synergies. Now, how do you change that dynamic and create real product synergies, which is what you want? Well, you give the M&A agenda to the product leader, and then they're going to buy teams that not only build great products and synergistic products, but also have teams that can work together. And so that's why we're seeing that finance budgets have been decreasing, because the M&A agenda is shifting to product, which means that as an entrepreneur, you want to build relationship with products, not just to sell your product, but also to sell your company, right, to get an exit.
Very interesting. And a question on the community side of it, right, and building the community, and then I guess ultimately probably selling within to the community. So let's say if everybody should be thinking about and selling to product managers, in that case, is everybody going to start building product manager communities? And then, like, you know, which ones do you join? Is it going to be a saturated market of communities for product managers? So, like, any thoughts around that and ways to differentiate?
I hope everybody creates product communities. And, you know, my goal is product's going to, you know, take over, become the most important function in business. So I hope that happens. Now, I think what you're asking is, if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to find the right community to sell into, how do you pick and choose? And so you really want to match your product with your buyer, right? And in some situations, you're going to have what people call product-led growth, which is products going to get adopted from the bottoms up. And that means that any community that's really large, right, has a lot of eyeballs, you're going to like look to find those for conversion. That's generally the exception to build a venture type business. It can be successful to build maybe lifestyle businesses in some scenarios. But if you want to build a business that's going to be, you know, scalable, you generally have a higher price point. And so you want to target director level, VP level, sometimes even if you're, you know, selling like massive, you know, like, for example, you're selling massive projects or infrastructure implementation, you're targeting the C-level. And so you want to make sure that the communities you're targeting have the right level of seniority is the first criteria. And then the second key criteria is product is now across every industry. It used to be that it was only or mostly in tech. But now it's everywhere. It's in fintech, in retail, in healthcare, in manufacturing. And so for your particular product, for this particular, you know, year or cycle you're in, depending on the verticals you target, you want to think about like what's the right community. So it's basically, you know, more complex than just product. I want to give you a sense for the growth that we're seeing as well. We track the number of Fortune 1000 that appoint a chief product officer. And this number in 2020, just before COVID, was 3%, i.e. very few. The number in 2023 was 30%, right? So 10x in 3 years. That's just to give you a sense in that kind of large category of Fortune 1000, how important product has become. And therefore, you know, how important it is for every entrepreneur to be selling to product folks.
Yeah, awesome. No, thanks for sharing that. Super interesting. And also a lot of food for thought given, again, especially like with the SaaS.com community, that typically we're bringing, you know, buyers and sellers together. But one person that's not necessarily always there is that product person. So, you know, something for us to think about as well if SaaS is shifting that way. Let's move into the quickish fire round now, SC. So what one thing has moved the needle the most for you in your career?
A lot of it is mindset. You know, so if people ask me what's the advice I can give them, I will say, like, you are ready.
What is the biggest failure you've made and lesson learned?
Okay, so biggest failure and lesson learned is stop too early, not keep pushing.
What about the hardest thing about being a VC?
The context switching.
And have you a favorite book on business? And if so, what is it?
Of course, I will say a plug-in for mine, but I'm also a huge fan of Geoffrey Moore, Crossing the Chasm. I had several opportunities to work with him and really respect what he built. And then for team and culture building, I'm a huge fan of the Enneagram framework to understand, you know, different working styles and build a great culture.
Awesome. Yeah, we managed to get actually Geoffrey Moore to speak at one of our virtual events during COVID, and that was a real highlight as well. And as we wrap up, obviously, you'll be at SaaS.com USA in Austin this May. You'll be speaking there. Very looking forward to meeting you in person and watching your talk. what are you speaking about, if you know already? And, you know, also like Austin, you know, what are your thoughts on Austin as a city? Anything you like about it? Why should people come?
Yeah, so I love Austin. I've been there many times. What I particularly love is how friendly and welcoming people are in the city. And then, you know, who can escape enjoying some of those amazing barbecues? That's really a treat. And then what I'm speaking about, so I'm doing a keynote on what makes a great product specifically for building AI products. And then I'm also going to be doing a workshop on planning for exits.
Awesome. Well, really looking forward to watching that that talk, seeing you there, and getting, you know, 1,500 SaaS founders and investors together in the wonderful city of Austin, May 13th to the 15th. Finally, SC, where can people find you online, and where can they find Mighty Capital also?
Yeah, so I'm really easy to find. You can reach me by email, sc@mighty.capital. You can check out our website. It's also mighty.capital. And then I'm very active on LinkedIn as well. So feel free to reach out. I respond to LinkedIn outreach most.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, SC, for joining the SaaS Revolution Show today and sharing with the SaaStock community. Looking forward to seeing you at SaaStock USA in May. Thank you so much, SC Moati from Mighty Capital.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the SaaS Revolution Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you learned something from it, check out saasdoc.com/events to find all the upcoming SaaSdoc conferences around the world.
Want exclusive SaaS content and actionable insights to grow your SaaS? Join our community of over 36,000 SaaS founders at saasdoc.com.